News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're making our way through a very big day on this Tuesday. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is going to be with us. Trey Yingst is scrambling to join us from Israel. Some really big news in the war with Iran. We're also going to keep you updated on what's happening in Washington today. We got our intel leaders are going to be on Capitol Hill. And we also have the SAVE Act is going to be front and center. And, of course, the nonstop debate about trying to get DHS open. As many of you are listening to me right now at the airport, maybe with AirPods in, or you might be driving there saying, now they're telling us now to come 2.5 hours before our flight for no reason, only because of this partial shutdown, because Democrats don't like ICE. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba. That'd be good honor. That's a big honor. Whether I free it, take it, I think I can do anything I want with it.
That is President Trump. Cuba about to collapse. This is a mammoth win for America. I hope we land this plane and kill off communism in the Caribbean for good. I'll examine.
Number two.
For me, as a Democrat, I will say and acknowledge now to produce basic fundamental kinds of ID to vote. That's not outrageous. That's not Jim Crow. That's not vote suppression, because that happens all across America.
Yep, the Save America Act being voted on in the Senate. But not even all Republicans are on board with this. We'll break down what the uphill battle that John Thune is fighting today.
Number one.
Lara Johnny, not well known, has been running the country for the last 18 months, day in and day out. This is the most significant leadership impact of the war since the Ayatollah was killed on day one of the war. It is a huge deal here.
And nobody better to describe it than Jack Keane. They got him. The killing of Ali Larijani is more impactful than the killing of the 86-year-old Ayatollah. As we combine with the IDF to take out a cadre of besieged commanders, including the guy in charge. Now, who are they? They're the thugs in plain clothes on the street and motorcycles intimidating and killing all the protesters. As our allies are called on to help with the Strait of Hormuz for their oil escorts, and they're not showing up. And I'm not saying all of them, but for the most part, they're not. Look, President could have done a better job getting everybody ready clandestinely about what we're going to do and maybe informing them. Understood. And that's just his way of operating. We get it. But in exchange for this, escorting ships, talking about doing it, Japan, for example, gets 90% of the oil that they use for their country coming through the Strait of Hormuz, and they say they're not going to give us any naval assets? Well, we have a Marine ship going, the USS Tripoli, going over there, and that's exactly what it's going to do. I'm waiting for Trey Yingst to join us, but let me give you an idea of what's taking place today. And this happened as I got up, at least announced. Ali Larijani, if you saw any of the video, if you're following the war closely, Ali Larijani was walking around on Friday on El Quds Day. That's their horrible police force and fighting force. And he was walking the streets saying, Tehran is safe. Iran is safe. The Americans aren't making any progress. And so was their president. And so was their finance minister. Well, guess who's dead? Ali Larijani. Not so safe, is it? He gets killed. Now, who is he? He's been in power since the 1990s. He left for a brief period, but the Ayatollah has asked him to come back and run things. And the supreme leader now is not a religious leader. He's incompetent. Evidently, his dad did not want him to be the new supreme leader. And he reluctantly took it. There's reports that when offered it to him, when he was supposedly elected by the Hall of Experts, whatever they are, he said, no, I don't want it. Well, we haven't heard from him since. And now we'll never hear from Ali Larijani again. Trey Yingst joins us now in between hits on television. He's Fox News' chief foreign correspondent, author of Black Saturday, an unfiltered account of the October 7th attacks on Israel and the war on Gaza. Trey, welcome back. For our audience, could you put in perspective how vital this taking out of Larijani was?
Absolutely. This was a major moment in this conflict. Ali Larijani was the de facto leader of Iran after the country's former supreme leader was taken out in the opening strike barrage of Operation Epic Fury. Larijani is a man who not only at times was acting as a hardline negotiator for the Iranians when it comes to their nuclear program, but also a deep part of the military structure that built the threat that exists today, why this operation had to begin. What was interesting about Larijani is that he, as you said, was on Friday during Quds Day in Tehran in the streets of his capital city, threatening the United States on live television, almost flaunting the fact that he could walk freely amid this war. Days later, he's dead. And so it speaks to the intelligence capabilities of the United States and Israel to track down these officials and then order strikes against them. And he is, again, an example of the hardline Iranian leadership that got the world to this moment.
And also, Trey, it's the Israelis along, and I've heard from someone involved in our intelligence apparatus, along with us, that tracked this guy down. The intelligence that we have on the ground is going to be key. And the Mossad has done a brilliant job infiltrating that organization, which exists to destroy Israel. They made it clear. So Israel's not going to be victimized. How good is this intelligence that they have?
The intelligence is very, very high, and it's real-time intelligence. And it's according to a senior official that I spoke with just about 2 hours ago, it is a joint operation between the United States and Israel. They are sharing intelligence in order to make this operation more efficient. But just to give you a sense behind the scenes of how real time this is, I was speaking with an intelligence official in Israel on Friday. And as we were speaking, we were talking about how the Israelis are going after Iran's Quds forces in Lebanon. And it's killed 7 top officials there in recent days. And as I was speaking to this official, he updated me, we've just killed a 7th. And it, again, just gives you the real-time behind-the-scenes update of how this takes place. Every single minute, they are tracking where these officials are, not just in Iran, but across the region, in order to take them out in real time when the strike window opens. And oftentimes, it can be just a few minutes. They get a piece of intelligence, and I'm told, and we actually haven't even reported this on air yet, but it's a very interesting piece of information. I'm told that Israel has some planes on standby, waiting, prepared for when those windows open. And they are almost like a rapid response force. If the intelligence comes through and they make the decision to target an official, they can immediately fly to the skies of Iran or to Lebanon and take out that official in real time.
So we understand that people are still being cracked down on. They're trying to amp it up and set up checkpoints. But it looks like Gulamazara Soleimani, who's heads up this the besiege force, and he was killed along with his deputy, we understand. We understand that he moved out of, let's say, the besieged headquarters and was under a tent. So they thought they would throw off the Israeli U.S. intelligence, but it would just maybe took a few more days to get him. Have you heard about that? They're moving these checkpoints, moving out of the headquarters?
Yeah, absolutely. And they've destroyed many of the headquarters as well. But when you look at how these officials are trying to get around the intel efforts, they're moving among the civilian population. They think that they'll be safe if they move to a tent encampment or where there are displaced people in Iran. And ultimately, they're not safe. And I'm told that in that strike, at least a dozen other besieged officials and commanders were taken out as well. And the actual number is likely much higher even than a dozen. It could be in the hundreds, some officials say, in terms of all of the besieged commanders and officials that they've taken out in these recent strikes. They're waiting for the battle damage assessments from the field to understand just how successful the strikes were. But these are people who, as one official described to me earlier today, they're people with blood on their hands. They were the individuals that were going to the streets of Iran earlier this year and open firing on protesters. They were, according to President Trump, responsible for more than 30,000 deaths among the civilian population in Iran. And so while we're not yet seeing people taking to the streets, they're still fearful because there is a strong security apparatus on the ground in Iran. There is a quiet support for what's taking place because the Iranian people have lived under this oppression for 47 years. And for the first time in decades, they are seeing the people responsible for the deaths of their fellow countrymen being taken out in U.S. and Israeli strikes.
I know you and I aren't tech experts, but what's it going to take to put the internet back on? I mean, we do have some of the most sophisticated cyber technologists in the world. I mean, we need for these people, the Iranians, to be able to communicate with each other, right?
Absolutely. And it's a great question. There are options to get internet, especially in pockets of the country, back online. And that's a critical component to all of this because information is one of the first casualties of war. And information in this war is especially especially delicate because the Iranian efforts to try and spread disinformation to make it look like they're winning a conflict that they are losing. They have spread information, disinformation, that Israel's prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, was killed. That is not true. They've spread fake videos online made with artificial intelligence that show Tel Aviv being completely wiped from the map. That is not true. And it raises questions about just how important the information is at this moment, not just for the outside world, but as you mentioned, for the Iranian people who are relying on the ability to communicate with each other, to demonstrate, to organize, and to express their disdain with the government.
You know, what's interesting is Ilarijani was putting out on social media reference to the Epstein files, almost to get, you know, to the American audience, to get under Trump's skin or to bring it up. And I'm thinking to myself, these guys are tapped into things that are going on in our country. So is China and Russia. So they are also trying to play the American media, who is way too willing, in my opinion, to go against this administration any chance they can get, not just the comedy shows, but the news publications.
What's interesting is that in the coverage of war around the world, there is often a feeling that all of the news must be bad news. And the reality is that covering war is incredibly complex. And we have to look at each and every story and each and every day at face value. And there are some days where there are things that objectively happen, and they're objectively positive and sometimes objectively negative. And we have to report them as fact, and we have to gather information. We have to speak with sources. And I'd say that's what I'm most proud of that we've done at Fox, because Fox has been able to cut through that noise and get to the facts of what's happening on the ground, and to understand the real regional threats that Iran was posing, because this was not a country that was pursuing a peaceful nuclear program. If they were pursuing a peaceful nuclear program, they wouldn't have had to bury it deep underground. They wouldn't have had to try and create a new nuclear facility underneath granite so that it couldn't be detected and struck with bunker buster bombs. They wouldn't have funded and supported these proxies from Hezbollah to Hamas to the Houthis in Yemen to these Iran-backed Iraqi Shia militias that targeted the U.S. embassy in Baghdad overnight. This was a regime that was preparing for this conflict. And now that the conflict is underway, the big war that everyone discussed for so many years could take place, they're getting hit so hard, they're not even able to replace the leadership that's being taken out in real time. And the really important thing that we learned from the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, last week was that the United States is systematically going after the production lines in Iran that are responsible for creating the ballistic missiles that are being used against Israel and Gulf countries right now, and also the country's drone program that has shared components and intelligence with the Russians that are being used against the Ukrainians. And so a lot of this is connected, and there will be objectively positive impacts for U.S. allies around the world in the weeks and months ahead, because when this production line is taken out, Iran can fire off all of the ballistic missiles that they have, but they're not able to create new missiles. And so there will be a day that this war is over and a day that Iran no longer has the capability to threaten U.S. troops or allies in the Middle East.
And Trey, let me bring this up. They get an intercontinental ballistic missile, which they were working on, supposed to be ready before 2035. After what we've seen, there's no doubt they were going to target Europe. We watch them target these so-called Arab allies in many cases, where they do a lot of their banking. And Europe was going to be in the line of fire if we took off the binoculars on what they were up to in the region. They try to destroy Israel, and now they're showing that they like to destroy their neighbors. Anything to stay alive. So why Europe doesn't see the urgency is unbelievable to me.
Absolutely. And when we look at even their actions over the past 2.5 weeks, they have fired ballistic missiles at Turkey multiple times. And they would have launched those missiles further if they had the capability to do so. They are firing on everyone in the region, including countries that were supportive of them at the negotiating table. I mean, the fact that they targeted Oman was a country that was mediating the conversations that they were participating in during talks in Oman and in Switzerland. They were targeting countries that never attacked them before: Qatar, Kuwait, the UAE, Bahrain. And while the Iranians said they were only targeting U.S. forces, that's not true. They were targeting residential areas. They were targeting energy infrastructure of countries that previously were neutral with them, that had no bad ties with the Iranian regime. And so, again, it speaks to just how unpredictable this regime was and remains. And also, it speaks to the Iranian ability to sow uncertainty in the Middle East. And that's exactly what President Trump has been trying to avoid. And this is all connected again. This all started relatively on October 7th, when Hamas launched this cross-border attack into southern Israel. And it started a domino effect across the region that led to Hezbollah getting directly involved in the fight, Iran's largest proxy, the Houthis firing on Israel, and the Iranian regime multiple times up until the 12-day war launching missiles at Israel. So it's all connected, and ultimately the Iranians showed during those rounds of violence that they were willing to strike, and they were willing to strike civilian populations, and they were willing to create chaos across the Middle East. But when we zoom out here, President Trump was trying to create a scenario in which there could be not only a ceasefire in Gaza, but a board of peace that would bring regional countries together to look toward a future in the Middle East that didn't involve all just death and destruction. Mm. And the Iranian regime was seen as the last major hurdle in those efforts.
So Witkoff says he was texted by the foreign minister about starting talks, and the foreign minister says, absolutely not true. I don't believe them for a second, the foreign minister, but why would they deny it? We only have 15 seconds left.
Well, the Iranians also said that they would stop targeting Gulf countries, and they have launched more ballistic missiles and drones at those countries. And so we have to take the reality at face value, and the reality is there are likely conversations going on behind the scenes because Steve Witkoff previously was in communication with the foreign minister.
All right, Trey, fantastic reporting, great perspective and analysis, as well as bringing us up to date on what's happening over in Israel and the region. Trey Yinks, thanks so much. We'll be back in a moment. Don't move.
Strong opinions backed by hard facts. Get the truth behind the spin with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Will it be necessary to use even a limited ground force to secure whatever nuclear material remains in Iran as part of that threat?
No.
And secondly, have you made a decision?
You mean to go in and get it?
Yes, sir.
Why would I tell you a thing like that?
And secondly...
You know, I can't say to reporters, sir, will you attack Karg Island? Will you occupy Karg? They ask me these questions. And I don't want to be mean, but... they're stupid questions. If any president answered those questions, they shouldn't be president.
I guess he's talking to me again, right?
I thought he got over it with you.
So just so you know, I asked him that. I interviewed him Thursday night. We aired the whole thing on Friday. And one of the questions I asked him was, are you going to take Karg Island? Or are you thinking about it? He's, why would I ever answer that question? It's a dumb question. I think you're smarter than that. But maybe I'm not. Did he follow up by saying maybe I'm not smarter than that or something to that
nature?
No,
he ended up, I feel like he felt bad about being so abrupt with you. And he's like, but you're still good. I get it.
And what happened Friday night?
Bombed Karg Island.
Yes.
Didn't take it over, though, but bombed it.
Yes. I think the Marines might come take it over, especially if we don't get any help from our allies to do the escorting. Hey, you know what? Taking Karg Island and tell who's ever not dead and who might be in charge that I'm doing it.
Join Fox in supporting our troops. From daily needs to global emergencies, help us be there for those who serve. Visit go.fox/Red Cross to donate to service to the armed forces today. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Our priority is always the national interest. And so we have been clear and consistent in our objectives throughout this conflict. First, we will protect our people in the region. Second, while taking the necessary action to defend ourselves and our allies, we will not be drawn into the wider war. And third, we will keep working towards a swift resolution that brings security and stability back to the region.
Wuss, Prime Minister of the UK, instead of saying, well, It's in our national interest because 70% of the oil that we need to process and run our country and make our jeans comes from the Strait of Hormuz. It's now in our national interest to support our ally, to do just one element to this war of a country that constantly takes our people hostage and harasses everybody in our interest in the region since 1979. But instead, it's not in our national interest to get oil and gas. Oh, yeah. And why do you need it from there? Because you don't drill. Because you're an environmentalist. You don't want to drill offshore the North Sea where you have you could have your own oil and gas. So these people are not worthy of our alliance. Look, the president could have done a better job letting our allies know what we're up to and why it involves them. But they're the ones knows it's within their national of interest to suppress this regime of evil. And if you think for a second, after watching what they did with long-range ballistic missiles to their Arab allies and friends, do you think for a second if they got missiles in the range of Europe, they wouldn't have been raining it on Europe right now? And the only reason they'd be blocked from landing those missiles would be because of our missile defense. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joins us now, Dallas County Republican Party Chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive, former congressman from Florida. Congressman, you see where the prime minister stands. We asked Australia. They said no. We said Japan is a maybe. France is a maybe. We're just looking for a little bit of help escorting ships through the Gulf through the Strait of Hormuz.
Well, it's good to be with you, Brian, and happy St. Patrick's Day to you. You look great on Fox and Friends.
Thank you. I am half Irish.
You are, and it's very well shows. But I think that what you see happening when you talk about the national interest, you mentioned the UK, you mentioned France, you mentioned Australia. Look at their domestic situation. Look at the fact that they are appeasing Islamic terrorists and jihadists within their own country. So that is how it affects their national security strategy and their foreign policy, because they're afraid of what could happen on inside their own shores, because they have allowed Iran and other countries to foster and foment this and support all of these jihadists that are coming into their countries through their open border policies and their, you know, delusional multiculturalism. So Keir Starmer can't stand up and say anything because he's afraid what could happen on the streets in the United Kingdom. So this is why it's so important that we look at Islamism and Islamic jihadism in our domestic security, because that can affect our national security decisions as well.
I want you to hear what Newt Gingrich said. He mixes the political with the military. Cut eight.
All you have to ask is a straightforward question. What is it worth to you to not have an Iranian nuclear weapon wipe out your city? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could be faced literally with your city being destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
This is not fear-mongering. The Iranian dictatorship has been at war with the United States since 1979.
Mm-hmm.
They've said it over and over. Mm-hmm. They call us the Great Satan. Mm-hmm. Their parliament chants death to America. Mm-hmm. They are trying to get nuclear weapons and missiles. They have a determination to defeat us.
And that's why he took action. And
yeah,
and this is really the only president that was going to do it.
No, you're absolutely right. And I want everyone to understand that I came on active duty in 1983, 7 days after the Beirut Barracks bombing, October 23rd of 1983. So it was very clear in my mind what had happened with 234 Marines and sailors and a soldier losing their lives because of Hezbollah. And now we're talking 1983 because of Hezbollah supported by Iran, a proxy army. And we're still seeing what Hezbollah is doing, still a proxy army of Iran. And so why would we have, you know, administrations such as the Biden administration, also the Obama administration before that, combined they gave over $17.7 billion to Iran. What do you think they're using those funds for? They're not using it for the betterment of their people. And again, why are we in this situation? Go back to Jimmy Carter. These enablers of this Islamic terrorism, you know, we have to correct this. And it's been 47 years, as Speaker Gingrich brought out. And so finally, we have the opportunity. We have eliminated their Navy. We have eliminated their Air Force. We have eliminated their air defense. We are draining their ballistic missile stocks. We are retarding their nuclear capability, because this is a tyrannical, theocratic, political ideology They don't believe in the mutually assured destruction theory that we had with the Soviet Union during the Cold War. That's the difference.
So the market's up almost 450 points. It was yesterday, I think, closed up 275 points. And oil's around $100 a barrel. So you know the economics. You know that we have a midterm coming up. If you're the president, and it looks like our allies are going to say you're in this alone. Okay, that's fine. You're in this alone. Not our Arab allies, by the way. The Gulf states are hanging tough. And I ask everybody, what are they saying behind the scenes? I ask them on and off camera. They're hanging tough. And Saudi Arabia's MBS came out and said, hit them harder. So, and the UAE and Saudi Arabia now talking to each other. They were at each other's throats 2 weeks ago. So, having said all that, as what would you recommend from what you know about our military strategy that we do, and since it's a race to get oil down and not stun the, you know, shock the economy?
I think that one of the things that we have to do is, you know, without a doubt, these drone sites that they're using, you may have to have some direct action of like Rangers, Special Operation Forces, Navy SEALs to go out and take out these facilities, just a raid operation, sensitive site exploitations. We need to make sure that we can, anything that can affect the Straits of Hormuz and that free passage, we need to try to eliminate that threat. And we have the ability to do it because we have complete air dominance, and I don't think that we have any real resistance that could meet up with us. But the most important thing is that the American people need to understand is that we're not dependent upon Iranian oil. We produce, we consume, we export these resources. And look at what has happened with Venezuela. I mean, we are, in a great position with those resources as well. So I think that what we have to do is we've got to talk to these oil speculators here and say, why are you driving up the prices for Americans when we are not dependent upon? Yeah, we're not dependent upon, what's going on in Iran. So I think the president needs to call some people into the Oval Office and say, cut the crap out, I think that's the most important thing, most important phone call that he can make right now.
You know who's benefiting big time? New Mexico, because the price of oil and gas is going up and they're making a lot of money and they're up mega dollars too. So, and we'll see, because they're speculating because of the danger in the strait. For example, we got to keep the barges and the tankers out of there because the insurers say, I'm worried about my crew, I'm worried about my tanker, and I'm worried about the cargo, which is, billions of dollars worth of oil, being exploded. So we can't insure to go through, even though Iran said the only people that can't go through are the U.S. and Israel. They hit another tanker yesterday. I want to bring you to Cuba if I can. Here's the President of the United States on what's happening. Cut 34.
When you say Cuba is next.
Cuba.
Is Cuba, whatever you do with the military there, it seems like something. Will that look more like Iran or Venezuela?
Can't tell you that. I can tell you that they're talking to us. It's a failed nation. They have no money. They have no oil. They have no nothing. They have nice land. They have nice landscape, It's a beautiful island. I think they have great people. I know so many people from Cuba that were treated terribly, and they're over here, and they became rich. They're very entrepreneurial people, very smart. I know a lot from Florida, especially. There's so many people.
So he's speculating, look, these guys are going to get an offer to go to another country that Maduro turned down. This is an opportunity to convert to a market economy and get rid of the last bastion of communism in our area. Nicaragua, I guess, could be holding on, but that's going to affect Nicaragua, too. Your thoughts about what's at stake in Cuba, and what would you do next, Colonel West?
Well, again, I think that you continue to put the pressure on them as far as the implosion, and you isolate them so that those guys there in that regime, you give them the exit door, and hopefully they take the exit door. If they don't take the exit door, we could probably do something just the same as what we did with Maduro, and I think there are people on the ground that would be able to provide us the right type of intelligence. But you are also seeing, like I said, again, you're seeing President Trump being able to isolate these Marxist, socialist, leftist dictatorships relationships and peel this onion back, and that's affecting, again, Russia and China and our hemisphere. So I think that you give them an exit door, but you make sure you keep them isolated, and you're starting to see a resistance build up on the ground there. And we have many Cuban expatriates, expats here in South Florida especially, that without a doubt can help in the rebuild and restoration. I think we got a better chance and opportunity in Cuba by far than you may have in Venezuela, definitely in Iran.
I mean, that might be an economic opportunity, but the only thing is we don't want to pick up the garbage. We don't want to get the streetlights working, but you want to leave a framework there that is not going to be communist. So that's the measure, right? You don't know how deep this party goes.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I tell you once again, you want to open it up towards investment so people can come in there and they can start investing in, you know, improving the power grid there for Cuba and things of that nature. But we don't want to get the United States of America, what we learned from, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan, you can't go in and talk about nation building. That's not what we do. You cannot talk about, you know, us taking on democratic institutions and things of that nature. That should not be something that we do. But we can enable, we can set the conditions for people to have a better way, a better life, and a better future. I think that's what President Trump is doing.
Yeah, I guess it would mean a lot. People of Venezuela, then Miami, there's a ton of them, and a ton in Cuba. I mean, a ton in Florida, too. So I can't imagine that not being a positive political outcome. But it doesn't happen if you don't isolate the regime, if you don't threaten Mexico and Canada, if you don't flip Venezuela. It just doesn't happen. And just talk about President Obama's foreign policy. He was, let's approach the communist country. Let's remove those barriers. When it comes to Venezuela, let's engage with them. When it comes to Iran, let's form the JCPOA and give the stiff arm to Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states. Mm-hmm. Everything he did was wrong. And everything he's doing is, Trump is showing us that.
Yeah, and what Barack Obama did, and by way, Joe Biden, they enabled those individuals. Let's never forget that when he gave his speech at the University of Cairo in 2009, Barack Obama invited the members of the Muslim Brotherhood to sit at the front row of his speech. So, again, he enabled all of the enemies and all of the people, you know, tell Vladimir that, you know, I'll have more time after I get reelected. I'll have better, you know, what he said to...
It's my last election. Yeah,
after my last election. So, yeah, I mean, he showed weakness and he enabled the people. Now Donald Trump is showing strength and you see a lot of these, you know, mistakes being corrected.
Yeah, I mean, he said that to Medvedev and we caught it on camera. He got a total pass on that. But it was Donald Trump that's too nice to Putin, which and sometimes he is. But I will bring this for the record. Ukraine has stepped up. They're already sending their best drone people into the Gulf states, and they said, whatever we could do for America, we will do. I didn't hear that from the UK. I didn't hear that from France. Didn't hear that from Germany. Didn't hear that from Japan. Didn't hear that from Australia. But a country at war says, how can I help? So I think that should be for the record.
Yeah, absolutely, because they understand is taking those weaponized drones of Iran off of the market helps them in their conflagration against Russia.
Go get him. Colonel Alan West, thanks so much.
Yes, sir. God bless. Take care, Brian. Happy St. Patrick's
Day. Same to you. Thanks so much. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So we're there till we win. We've won. We haven't won enough. I'm sorry, we've got Don from Palm Beach on the line. Sir, you said the war will end when we achieve our objectives, and they're very clear, and that we've won, but not won enough. Sir, if you can, how will we know then when we've won enough?
When I feel it. When I feel it in my bones.
All due respect to your bones, but should we really be giving them more responsibilities? Seems like they've got enough on their plate with the getting you up and down the stairs thing. That's big. You're calling on the Iranian people to try to overthrow their own government. Donnie, down in Palm Beach, do you agree with that statement?
So I really think that's a big hurdle to climb for people that don't have weapons. Who's going to do that? They literally have people in the streets with machine guns, machine gunning people down if they want to protest, okay?
Sir, it's an excellent point. Donnie makes an excellent point. Guys, there seems to be some disagreement amongst the Trumps on the merits of, let's call it an Iranuary 6th type movement.
So that was our interview, right?
It was. So Jon Stewart basically had like four video versions of Trump all saying different things when asked the same question. And then he had Don from Palm Beach calling in, and they were playing audio from your interview last week with him.
Yeah, I watched the very open of it. I mean, and I think he was having the guy we like, or like in theory for what he's doing, the new mayor of San Francisco on as a guest.
Yeah, one of the running for governor in California.
Yeah, that or the one from San Jose.
At San Jose, it was
San Jose Mahan. So yeah, two of these guys, it seemed to be reasonable Democrats, almost like a Bill Maher running for office, who is having somewhat success in San Francisco because he's trying to be reasonable and cracking down on the homeless situation. Did you see how much New York is paying for homeless? $82,000 per homeless person. Are you kidding me? That's more than most salaries of people in New York City. We're paying $82,000.
It makes zero sense.
And you know, we paid under Bloomberg, I think, 28. So it's going through the roof, and we got more of them in this horrible climate. Think about this. We had 30 people freeze to death, but you get so much money here, it's too enticing, I guess.
Apparently so. Yeah. But to go back to The Daily Show, actually, they also played you with Mike Waltz from a week ago on One Nation when you were reading the quote from Trump.
Oh, really?
On the Strait of Hormuz. But I'm like, that was from 2 weeks ago when he was pulling it back.
Right. He is probably a big fan of mine.
Jon Stewart, I think he is obsessed with you and might be listening right now.
I do. I'm heartened by the fact that I still have my sense of humor. Like, I watch him exaggerate Trump saying and doing things, but I appreciate when people are funny when they do it, as opposed to what we're seeing with Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel, who are like, Donald Trump's a horrible person, am I right? And here's an example. Who can hear? And they clap, and he takes the seat afterwards. And even his shot that he took at Trump on the Oscars was weird. He was asked to present. No one's asking you to bring up Trump. Why are you bringing up Trump?
Because that's literally his entire world. He's just obsessed. Like, it's TDS explained.
I mean, I remember Norm MacDonald was obsessed with O.J. Simpson, and it got him fired as Weekend Update guy on SNL because Don Ohlmeyer was friends with O.J. Simpson. But O.J. Simpson was a murderer, right? He wasn't president of the United States for a party you didn't vote for.
And I feel like Norm MacDonald was such a curmudgeon. Like, that was his shtick. Like,
and he's funny.
Hilarious.
Yeah. It's good. If you're a murderer, I think you're open season. You don't need to be fair and balanced.
Agreed.
But a president.
But at the time, it was just an alleged murderer.
Right. But I love to have seen Jon Stewart during the Biden years, because Joe Biden was he didn't know how to get off stage. He was mispronouncing names and countries. Would he have made fun of him? I'll never know.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way on a big day for the war in Iran. We're also looking at St. Patrick's Day in New York City. It's bigger here than it is in Ireland. And Boston's big, but I think New York is bigger. I can tell you firsthand how big New York is, but I don't have it in comparison. Just know it's a really big day around here. It's great for our bars and restaurants. But as a country right here, we're drinking less, which you would think is good. But it's not really good if you're a restaurant owner or you're in a bar. Varney and Company will do a simulcast. We're going to talk to Francois Poirier. He is a CEO of TC Energy, which is one of North America's largest infrastructure companies, energy infrastructure companies. Energy is a hot topic as we have that war in Iran. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba. That'd be good. That's a big honor. Whether I free it, take it, I think I can do anything I want with it.
That is true. Cuba about to collapse. This is a mammoth win for America. I hope we can land this plane and kill off communism in the Caribbean for good. We'll examine.
Number two.
For me, as a Democrat, I will say and acknowledge now to produce basic fundamental kinds of ID to vote. That's not outrageous. That's not Jim Crow. That's not vote suppression, because that happens all across America.
That is Senator John Fetterman, Save America Act, being voted on in the Senate, but not even all Republicans are on board. We'll break it down.
Number one.
Lara Johnny, not well known, has been running the country for the last 18 months, day in and day out. This is the most significant leadership impact of the war since the Ayatollah was killed on day one of the war. It is a huge deal here.
General Jack Keane puts it in perspective. They got him. The killing of Ali Larijani, for me, from what I understand, is more impactful than the killing of the 86-year-old Ayatollah. As we combine with the IDF to take out the cadre of besieged commanders, those are the thugs that walk the streets in plain clothes and motorcycles and kill every day to Iranian citizens, and they are told to shoot on sight if they see anything unsavory. Now they've lost their commanders and hopefully a lot of their strength. As we look to see what's happening at the Strait of Hormuz, we ask our allies to help out, and for the most part, they're saying we want to stay out. Let's bring in Florida Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins. He's a 23-year Army Special Forces veteran who's going to be running for governor in the 2026 nominee, going for the Republican nomination against Byron Donalds. Welcome back, Lieutenant Governor. Welcome.
Hi, Brian. It's good to be on, man. I appreciate it. It's a crazy time in our world, man. That's why we need strong leadership.
So first, tell me, what's the significance for you to taking out this Ali Larijani and taking on Iran?
Look, man, we know Iran has been an enemy of freedom, peace in that region going back to the Carter years. The Carter administration's failures really caused this for the last 40-plus years. It's incredibly important to take out the tacticians, the leaders, the people who understand how to accomplish things on the ground. You know, taking out the Ayatollah, it's important, but when you get the guys who move the troops, who understand the tactics, who understand how to move assets and put leverage on people in the region, that changes the game entirely. Huge win. Congratulations to President Trump, the entire staff, all the way down. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. What does it say to you that he was walking the streets on El Quds Day on Friday, along with the president, saying, look how safe we are. The Americans aren't making any progress. And now the guy that's been around and a power player since the 90s is dead.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Look, you know, I'm reminded often that being saved lives, right? This is proof positive, right? They put it out there. We found them. He's held accountable for what they've done. The terror regime in Iran has been behind so much during the war on terror and going back there, from funding to terrorism to just direct weapons going into theaters. Incredible. And hats off to our men and women, our assets who helped locate these people. You know, just incredible, amazing work.
All right, so let's talk about what's happening also in Florida, how it affects you guys. First, Venezuela. How big is the Venezuelan population in Florida? And when Maduro gets arrested and put into a Brooklyn cell, what does it do for the Venezuelan community?
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you what. The day this happened, I was out with many people in our Venezuelan community. I live in Tampa. They were out there waving flags. They're so excited. It changes everything. You know, I think about some of my friends. I have a dear friend of mine who grew up in Venezuela. He fled there and came to America, became an Army Green Beret, and got injured. Incredible patriot. It means so much to them because they have family trapped there. You know, socialism leads to communism, and it always turns out the same. It destroys families. It destroys communities, and it destroys entire nations. You go from a thriving nation to utter poverty across the board. But the destabilization of China along with this is incredible. Its effect on the entire region, and then the secondary effect of how it's really pulled the chocks out from underneath Cuba, allowing regime shift and allowing the people to rise up. It's incredible. It's staging this for the world, really. And it's putting America in a much better position where our people are safer. And we're going to be able to push this thing forward in an incredible way. Again, great strategic leadership by the Trump administration. Hats off to them on this.
So Oscar Perez Olivia Fraga was on NBC. He is deputy prime minister of Cuba, and it looks like that nation's about to fall. Listen to this, cut 36.
Cuba is open to having a fluid commercial relationship with U.S. companies, also with Cubans residing in the United States and their descendants. And this extends beyond the commercial sphere. It also applies to investments.
So what would it mean to the Cuban community for the communism to collapse?
Well,
and what about that
Patria
offer?
Patria Vida, right?
Huh?
Yeah, what an incredible thing. Patria Vida, it is. You have to have peace and freedom in Cuba. They're right off our doorstep right here in Florida. People forget what kind of a hub that is for intelligence, for other nations who don't like us. Go back to the Kennedy years. Proof positive, right? It's never shifted. What this means to the Cuban people is everything. We have a huge, vibrant Cuban community. They bleed American red, white, and blue, but they have family trapped in Cuba. I just left South Miami, and I'm headed up north on the eastern shoreline here. And we talked about this today with several people over at Casa Cuba, where they were so excited just for the potential, the opportunity that it's going to flip and roll, and they're open to this shift. But the truth is this, don't make a deal with the devil. We've seen this. You've got to hold them accountable. Regime change has to happen. They need freedom, and those aren't freely elected people in that nation. They have held on to power for far too long, and I think power has to come. I think President Trump understands that.
Is that a popular thing in the Florida community? You think this is a popular move?
I think it is. I think it is with people who know what matters. For freedom-defending Americans, 100%. You see the tactical risk, the strategic risk, just off our shoreline. But I'll tell you, when you talk to the Venezuelans, the Cubans, the people who fled, their families fled terrorism, and they fled communism, it means everything to them. It's closure. They're proud to be Americans, but their heritage goes back there. So, 100%. I think this means a lot to the people of Florida.
So let me just bring you to the breaking news. You spent 23 years in the military, and this just came across. Joe Kent, a counterterrorism official that President Trump hired, has resigned as director of the National Counterterrorism Center. He says the pressure from Israel pushed Donald Trump into the war against Iran. I cannot in good conscience support the ongoing war in Iran. He says that Israel pushed us there. Now, Joe Kent has been was a constant on Tucker Carlson's TV show when he was here, and my sense is Tucker and others are against this, and that fits the bill. But what are your thoughts?
Look, Joe's actually a friend of mine. You know, in the Green Beret community, it's pretty tight. Joe's a friend. I love him. We disagree on these points, and we've had these discussions. The problem is this. If we ignore the world around us and we don't use peace through strength or walk softly and carry a big stick, pretty soon our enemies are going to come together, and they're going to be on our doorstep together. You have to have people who fight alongside you. That's why we support our allies. The war on terror doesn't mean we have to wait for them to attack us. Sometimes you have to be proactive and press out there. That's exactly what we're doing. This isn't boots on the ground. This isn't us spending 20 years slogging through Afghanistan. This is us pushing back against people who funded terror, who killed Americans, and is 100% the right thing to do. I love Joe, but we disagree on this.
Yeah, and gave CNN a headline for a few days or a few hours, judging by the pace of this. So why?
That's right.
Yeah, let's talk about what you're looking to do. You want to be the next governor of Florida. Why?
That's right. Well, you need leadership. Serious times call for serious leaders. In this race, we're going to need somebody who understands how to get things done. I passed 55 bills in 3 years. That's more than most people pass in 8. From constitutional carry to blocking China from buying our land to helping bring justice to those people who were trapped by the FARC down in Colombia to tough on crime policies. I know what has to be done because I've helped do it across the state of Florida. We have to maintain the pressure that Governor DeSantis has had on this, because our numbers and our math win. You have a shared debt of $227 per person in Florida. What is it, $127,000 or something federally? We have paid off over 50% of our debt. We have maximized our reserves, and we have to keep that agenda and that pressure moving forward. But more than anything, President Trump, he needs a warrior down here in Florida, someone who's got a spine of steel. Look, I've been shot, blown up, lost a leg, requalified as a Green Beret, and got up and kept fighting for our nation, for our state, for our people. It's no different. This is a continuation of my ambition, just a different battlefield. 100%, he needs warriors in Florida. We're going to lead. That's what we do.
So you have some competition. Byron Donalds has gotten the endorsement of President Trump. Also, House Speaker Paul Renner is running, and Investor James Fishback is running. And we know the primary is August 18th. What's your strategy?
That's right. So the strategy is simple. People migrate to those who have solutions, who have answers, and have a past history of getting things done. Very simply put, the best indicator of future performance is past performance. I've done more than many in these areas, and I'll continue to do that. One, two, I also have been out here working, doing 5 to 8 events a day, talking to the people. That's working. We're slowly moving up in the polls, and the gap is closing. People crave leadership, strong, conservative leadership. I can provide that. I understand our people. I understand what the fight is about. You know, having grown up on welfare, adopted by my grandparents, fighting for our nation abroad, feeding people after disasters into millions of meals, I've seen people at their worst, and I've stood there and led beside them and led in front of them to protect them every step along the way. It's no different now. People get a vote in Florida. Yes, Byron has the governor, the president's endorsement. But in the end, you know, the people have a vote. I love our president. I went to war for him. I was served underneath him, and we'll stand beside him. But he needs someone with a spine of steel and that warrior ethos. That's who I am. That's what I do.
All right, Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, best of luck. Thanks for your time, and we'll continue to follow all these breaking stories. Thank you.
Yeah, Brian, thank you. God bless.
You got it. So Joe Kent has resigned. He's an advisor to Tulsi Gabbard, who has had a low profile during these conflicts in Venezuela, as well as Iran. Now, politically, all President Trump's opponents are going to go to town with this. But I will say this, Joe Kent, appreciate him. He actually lost his wife in battle in 2003. Appreciate his mind, but he did run for Congress twice and lost. President put him into counterterrorism, and he feels as though Israel has buffaloed us into this. But when you see the intelligence, you understand that's not the case at all, especially what you see Iran has done since this conflict began. What do you think? 1-866-408-7669. Your call's next.
From breaking news to big name guests, Brian brings you insight you won't hear anywhere else. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Mr. Vice President, Democrats are already calling you the fraud czar. What's your reaction to that title? And then second,
good title.
Second, given I like your past skepticism of foreign adventurism, are you completely on board with the current war in Iran?
So I like fraud czar.
So he likes fraud czar, and that is true. J.D. Vance has got that job now. He's head of fraud. He's going to go from state to state. He said blue states where most of it happens, but he'll do red states, too, if it turns out they're wasting billions and millions. And it's just so ironic that we're cracking down on fraud while almost every blue city is raising taxes. Here in New York, raising taxes. Here in Bud, that's what they want to do in Chicago, raising taxes. In Seattle, raising taxes. Washington State, finding a way to have a millionaires and billionaires tax as they put a referendum on that in California. So instead of saying, wait, what's happening with our money? They just say, well, we have a deficit. We need more money. But you know what people with money are doing? Leaving. And let me ask you, why would you not want to go to Florida if you're Zuckerberg? Why would you want to stay out in California and step over the homeless every day when you go to over to Miami and get a house for less money and pay less taxes? And there's no one's going to chase out a billionaire. In fact, they welcome billionaires, especially in the tech sector. So that is J.D. Vance. And one thing the president asked him is, look, don't do what Kamala Harris is. Joe Biden gave her a job, handle the border. And she basically said no. And the word is from her camp that she said, wow, he's setting me up to fail. Setting me up to fail? What are you talking about? So this is what Trump was saying about fraud, Cup 47.
When you look at the Minnesota scam, a lot of it has to do with Somalia. Nobody's calling out anybody, but a lot of it has to do, but it's Somalia and plenty of others. And I believe the governor is complicit. I believe Ilhan Omar is complicit. I believe that your attorney general is complicit. And if they are, you're going to hopefully find out about it, and you're going to have to do what you have to do.
So that will be they're going to get really cracked down in Minneapolis. But I think there's other places they're going to hit, too. California is right under the spotlight at this moment. And I'm sure you're going to find an absolute mess with that horrible Governor Pritzker and that terrible mayor with single-digit approval ratings. So the president said this is going to be a big test for J.D. Vance, who clearly, in my view, was not for the Venezuela move and was not for Iran intervention. And that's fine. But as vice president, you really shouldn't know that until maybe you run for president. But if you have Joe Kent, who just bailed out as an aide to Tulsi Gabbard over in intelligence, well, that's pretty much J.D. Vance's wing of the party. He's got the podcast wing. You know, he's with, I wouldn't say necessarily with Joe Rogan, more with other podcasts. So he does not want to alienate that crew where the president of the United States has called out other people in the podcast and just praise people with a great radio show like Mark Levin. So the president's made clear, he's pointed to the other and saying, you're not real MAGA. He says, I'm real MAGA. I started it. And he said, Sean Hannity and Mark Levin are his guides along with Ben Shapiro. So there's a divide, no doubt about it. But I think it's not the divide of, you know, Ford and Reagan. It's not the divide that the left had with Ted Kennedy and Jimmy Carter. This is a fringe movement. It's more Pat Buchanan taking a bite out of George H.W. Bush. But even Pat Buchanan, with his views, were different, very conservative, and now very much mainstream with the Republican Party. But he was more traditional, going through the normal traditional venues. Now with all these media outlets and the diversity of media beyond cable and network news, it's very curious to see how it's going to affect the midterms, especially when this war gets through. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. By the way, the market's up 156 points, around 47,000.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I think that this conflict will certainly come to the end in the next few weeks. Could be sooner than that, but the conflict will come to the end in the next few weeks, and we'll see a rebound in supplies and a pushing down of prices after that. But yes, we were very aware that we would have short-term disruption. We would cause a little bit of increased prices on Americans. Prices today are still far below what they were in the Biden administration, where they were begging, bartering, and bribing Iran to behave better.
They had a totally different policy. Please take the JCPOA back. We made Saudi Arabia a pariah nation, and we took the Houthis off the terror watch list, but it didn't matter to Iran. And now they lost their supreme leader, their leading commander, up to 40 to 45 of the leading commanders, and Ali Larijani has just been taken out, along with the commander with the besieged thug force that walks through the streets berating and killing average everyday Iranians for problems with female cover-up or moral police, so they go through your phone. So that's some of the horrific things happening on the streets, and that's why we're taking out their commanders. But what the Iranians have been doing is shutting off the Strait of Hormuz, or threatening to. Therefore, insurers are saying, don't go through there. The tankers could explode. I can't insure it. We lose the cargo. We lose our crew. We lose the tanker. So a lot of them are staying out. I think only a handful are going through, and there's usually about 100 a day that go through on a regular basis. So now we just got a handful, and the price is going to stay up until that changes. Let's bring in Francois Pournier. He is the CEO of TC Energy, which is one of North America's largest energy infrastructure companies. Francois, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Brian.
All right, so the market seems a lot happier the last 2 days. What could you tell us about energy and where it's heading as this conflict continues?
I think, the energy markets are living and dying by the headlines in the near term, as you pointed out in your prior comments. Prior to the conflict getting started in the Middle East, we had very good balance in supply and demand. And anytime you introduce uncertainty, as there is now, or a shock in supply, what you learn is that there's a very delicate balance between supply and demand, and it can be disrupted in a very small way, and it can result in very big swings in prices in the short term. You saw LNG prices, spot prices went up to all the way up to about $25. They're now settled in calendar 26 prices around $15, which is still $5 up from where it was, Meanwhile, us in the United States, you know, we're looking at about $3 natural gas.
$3 natural gas, which we are the Saudi Arabia of natural gas, right? We are the number one exporter?
Yes.
So that helps. How much of natural gas goes through the strait?
Well, in the form of liquefied natural gas, there is a fair bit that goes. And in fact, because of the danger of producing in that area, Qatar, which is, I think, the second largest exporter of natural gas in the world, they've essentially shut in production in the near term. So what this is teaching buyers of LNG is the importance of diversifying, which is creating a huge opportunity for us here in America to continue to grow our LNG exports.
Are we capable? Do we have the resources?
Absolutely. We absolutely have the resources. In fact, very few people have realized that when you combine Canada and the U.S.'s oil and gas reserves, they're actually larger than the Middle East's. So the United States produces annually about 120% of its annual energy needs. Japan, on the other hand, another G7 country, produces 10 to 15% of its energy needs. So there's a great opportunity for us. What we need is we need to build our pipelines faster through permitting reform, streamlining regulations, in order for capital to flow and projects to accelerate. And I feel that the current administration is really focused on that.
And who do you go to for that? Is that the Department of Energy or Interior? I know Doug Burgum's very zoned in on permitting reform. He understands it as a former governor. Have you gotten the response yet? We're already a year in.
Well, they're great listeners. Secretary Burgum, is, as the chair of the National Energy Dominance Council, has been very focused. Secretary Wright as well. I chaired the National Petroleum Council's study on permitting reform. Secretary Wright gave us 6 months to do a study that, you know, the studies in the past have taken up to 2 years to get done. And it just speaks to a sense of urgency that this administration has. It's a very complex topic on permitting reform. And so this administration is moving more quickly on it than any other I've ever seen in my 40-year career.
Let's just hope they get a lot done in 4 years, because who knows what's coming next, I guess, with energy especially. But, Francois, before we talk more about the Gulf and its and the reaction to it, do you feel as though people are concerned about the environment, but that they're not insane about the environment? They're not declaring the world's going to end in a year. If you don't do this, there's going to be protests and we're going to throw soup at a Picasso. It doesn't seem like it seems like the mania has leveled off. Is it because Republicans are in power, or do people realize that was a horrific overreaction?
Well, I think starting with the conflict in Ukraine, and, you know, the prospect of Europe getting cut off of natural gas supply from Russia, you know, a bit more rationality was brought back to global markets. And I would say that prior to that, as you pointed out, Brian, I think sustainability concerns were outweighing affordability and reliability. Now I think there's more balance between the three. And that's where natural gas has become such a prominent commodity, because it does the best job of any commodity to balance all three of those issues.
So right now, I know people are actually making money, especially in New Mexico. They're saying how much money they're making because the price of a barrel is up over $100 roughly in and around there. So people are making money of this. Is a lot of it on speculation? Are people looking to take advantage of this moment, and in a way that I don't think is good for our national security personally?
Well, I think, you know, what drives world prices for oil or for natural gas, for that matter, is the amount of supply and demand that's out there. When you have a supply shock like a global conflict and production is artificially reduced, the problem is we've got a constraint on the infrastructure to get more product out to the market to make up for the shortfall that's created because of the conflict in the Strait of Hormuz. So, you know, in North America, we've been underinvesting in infrastructure for many decades, whether it's electric transmission or natural gas or crude oil pipelines. And we have to be a little bit more proactive. And that's where I would say the current White House administration is the most energy literate I've seen in my entire career, and hence the focus they've had on speeding up permitting, because the best way to combat temporary shocks like a global conflict is to increase the amount of supply that's made available around the world.
So with 75 years, you're celebrating 75 years of your company, rang the bell in the stock exchange. How have you guys grown?
Well, we started off as an ambition to connect Western Canadian production to demand in the eastern parts of the country. In 4 years, from concept to in service, in 4 years, we put the longest, at the time, the longest natural gas pipeline in the world into service. What we are today, though, is a North American giant. We have 60,000 miles of pipe across three jurisdictions. We connect all three countries in North America for natural gas. We're the only company that can bring natural gas to the coasts for LNG export across the entire continent. And more, with the advent of LNG, natural gas has now become a global commodity. And so there's a huge role for the United States to play with its national energy dominance ambitions. First of all, domestically, to supply the energy that the AI industry needs to generate intelligence and win the AI race that we're fighting with China. And secondly, to provide reliability and affordable energy to our allies in the free world.
Francois Poirier is with us, the CEO of TC Energy, celebrating 75 years. And we're talking about energy now. What kind of shock has this been for you guys?
Well, we're in the natural gas pipeline business. We don't own the commodity that's in our pipelines. Think of us as a highway upon which natural gas moves. What I will tell you, however, is that with instability in global markets comes an increasing interest in diversifying supply. So we have been taking inbound inquiries on investing in more infrastructure for export over the last couple of years. Right now, we've got about $8.5 billion of projects that are board approved to construct new pipelines in the United States. And I could see us, if we run the table on what we're looking at this year, I could see us doubling that commitment before the end of the calendar year.
Wow. Francois Poirier, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Congratulations on 75 years with TC Energy. Not all of it. You haven't been there for 75 years, but your company has. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian. Take care. You got it.
Hey, when we come back, we do a simulcast on Fox Business Network with the own Stuart Vornin, number one show around. Don't move.
Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. So glad you're there. We're going to do a simulcast with Stuart Varney in a moment and take your calls on the back end if we have a couple of minutes, if he leaves it out there. But basically, we're talking about the DHS shutdown is one of the stupidest things ever. You know, keep in mind, you don't hear Democrats talking about health care cutbacks, the expiration of health care subsidies anymore. They used it as an excuse to shut the government down for 40 plus days until some Democrats broke ranks and finally started up the government again. Then after Minneapolis, they thought it'd be a great idea to shut down the DHS, funded everything else. So now we're in this big shutdown. Let's listen.
10:51. That means it's time for Brian Kilmeade. All right, Brian. Pro-Hamas protester Mahmoud Khalil says it is racist to ask him to condemn Hamas. Watch this.
It's very racist to ask a Palestinian this question just to validate their views, because they don't see them asking any Israeli or American politician about condemning all the killing that's happening, whether, you know, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Iran, anywhere.
Okay. Look, Brian, you know what I think? You have at it. I think it's ridiculous.
Of course it's ridiculous. And by the way, everyone asks Israelis every single day, do you condemn what's happening in Gaza? And the Israelis, for the most part, go, no, I don't. And American Jews, for the most part, 75-25, they don't. Every single day. Mahmoud Khalil, to everyone, should understand who he is. This guy was organizing the anti-American, anti-Israeli protests on Columbia University. He actually organized all the encampments, the takeover of a building. This guy was a graduate student who graduated, still living on campus housing, came here from Syria slash via London to go study here at an elite university, stopping some American kid from doing it. And his thanks is protesting. His thanks to America is protesting against America. So because he lied on his paperwork saying what his intentions were here, they kicked him out. But he's been fighting deportation after being in a holding tank for a while. And now we got a mayor of New York City inviting him over for lunch and dinner. And now we have the this Austin seminar inviting him to be a keynote speaker. Why? Because he's an illegal immigrant who lied on his visa application, is an ungrateful green card holder, while everybody else waits for a green card the right way, like you did?
Yeah, you're right, like I did all those years. One more for you, Brian. CNN had a transportation inspector on who said, my message to Congress is you don't remember why we have the TSA. It's completely irresponsible to use them as a political football. So now listen to Congressman Adam Smith and his response. Watch this.
There are some really important issues at stake here. That sort of stupid comment really doesn't help anything. We know how important it is. I'm headed to the airport as soon as I get done with this interview. All right. But the issues do matter. Now, there's a simple solution. I mean, Democrats and Republicans have both wanted to fund TSA for some time, and also the Coast Guard and FEMA and everything else. What we don't want to fund is ICE.
Do Democrats get the blame for the long lines at airports?
Of course.
Just doesn't want to fund ICE.
You can't pick and choose what you're going to fund. Oh, I don't like the post office. Let's not fund the post office. Oh, I think ICE was too aggressive in Minneapolis. Did you like when they arrested that child abuser that escaped from Ecuador that was picked up in Boston the other day? Do you like when they picked up all those killers that have been out there, that the millions that Joe Biden left in? But you don't like ICE, so you don't want to fund ICE. How dare you? How dare you ask them to fund ICE? Do they understand that's a branch of law enforcement? Didn't they all learn enough about defund and reimagine the police? It basically cost them seats in the House and maybe the Senate chamber and ultimately the presidency, because there's so many American families with law enforcement in them who understand retired and active what they do on a daily basis. And when you have a president let in millions illegally who they knew nothing about, including 791 Iranians who came across the border that we can't find, let alone the gotaways, and you wanted to fund that organization that's really been funded to 2029, it is so outrageous. Keep in mind, Stuart, for those people out there, don't say Republicans haven't given. When you didn't like the Homeland Security Secretary, she's gone. You didn't like Greg Bovino, he's retired. You don't like the roving patrols to go into Home Depots, that's not what Tom Homan's doing anymore. They actually pulled a lot out of Minneapolis. Why doesn't Chuck Schumer and company understand you can take the win?
All right, quickly, Brian, what's your defense of the Irish goodbye? You know, leaving a party without saying goodbye may not be good, bad manners at all. I do it. What do you do?
I do it every day. I live by it. I think America should embrace the Irish in this. Enough about the formal goodbyes. Great to see you. Got to run. Why? By the time you say goodbye, you're already 20 minutes late. You wait for your moment. People are looking elsewhere. You duck out the door over to your car. Hey, I missed you when you say goodbye. No problem. I'll see you later. See you at pickleball. Watch you at the game. I'll see you in the neighborhood. You don't need a formal goodbye. You already gave a formal hello.
You got it right, Brian, yet again. Thanks, Kilmeade. You're all right.
Thank you very much, Stuart Varney. Appreciate it. Irish goodbyes, I'm all for that. You're for that too, Allison, right? I mean, do you do it too? You're not Irish.
Yeah, I mean, occasionally. I try not to, but you like to do it. You like to.
I have to.
It's too much time.
The worst is, okay, let's run. And by the time you get through everybody, via any type of party, what is the point? You already wrapped it up. Wrapped it up. You duck out. That's what the door's for.
So my question, is Dawn in agreement with you on the Irish goodbye? She always wants to say goodbye.
Never slips out. She's worried if she doesn't say goodbye to one person, she's worried that person's going to be mad.
So then do you stand outside, like, basically tapping your foot annoyed and waiting, or do you
I try to duck out. Because if I'm in the background, then I got to go by and say goodbye, too. So I'll say, hey, I'm out of here, and I'll go wait.
You'll wait in the car.
Someone's going to warm up the car.
That's fine.
Or put the air conditioning on in the summer.
But is that a man versus woman thing? Because I will say for Andy and myself, that happens. I'm like, we have to say goodbye to certain, not everyone, but sometimes certain people you have to say goodbye to. You don't
Host.
Agree.
Host? Yeah. That's about it. You know, You know, you do it. Hey, by the way, or you send a text message. Thanks for the party. Had to run.
That's fair.
Right. So that's my feeling. By the way, I hope to see you in Reno, Nevada. History, Liberty, and Laughs will be stopping there May 30th. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Also, in July 11th, we're going to be in Pensacola, Florida. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for details. All streamed on Fox Nation. Don't forget One Nation Sunday at 10 p.m. Meanwhile, a lot of show left in this beautiful Tuesday. We'll bring you the latest on this beautiful St. Patrick's Day. How's the parade by you? Let me know.
Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. We have a lot going on today, a lot of moving parts. Of course, St. Patrick's Day. And in New York City, where I'm located, it's the biggest and most prestigious parade in the country. Sorry, Boston, it just is. And we have the Irish officials here today. It's led by our National Guard. So it's been a lot. It's a lot of fun. A lot's going on. And we have a country right now in the middle of a war with Iran. This is all a longtime nemesis. And it's pretty clear to me why we're doing it. But it's not clear to Joe Kent. He was a counterterrorism official working under Tulsi Gabbard, who just resigned, claiming in a way that a lot of podcasters do, that Israel pushed us into this war by using disinformation, that Iran is not an imminent threat to America. So he's gone, and now Democrats have something to lead with because they don't want to lead with the other news, which is they got a main fish in the attempt to take down that ugly government. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba. That'd be good. That's a big honor. Whether I free it, take it, I think I can do anything I want with it.
That is the fall of the communist country. This mammoth win for America, it's about to happen. It will finally, in my view, kill off communism in the Caribbean forever. Next stop after that would be Nicaragua.
Number two.
For me, as a Democrat, I will say and acknowledge now to produce basic fundamental kinds of ID to vote. That's not outrageous. That's not Jim Crow. That's not vote suppression, because that happens all across America.
Yep, the Save America Act going to get a vote on in the Senate. But a lot of Republicans are not on board. What is wrong with voter ID? I think if you just gave a pure voter ID, as long as Donald Trump says it's important to him, they will not pass it.
Number one.
Lara Johnny, not well known, has been running the country for the last 18 months, day in and day out. This is the most significant leadership impact of the war since the Ayatollah was killed on day one of the war. It is a huge deal here.
And there's no doubt about it. It looks like Ali Larijani, the most impactful kill to date, more important for me than the Ayatollah, because this actually guy was a guy in charge of making decisions with the country. He also gave the order to crack down and kill up to 30 to 40,000 protesting Iranians. Meanwhile, Bashir's commanders also wiped out. The commanders and his allies are taken out. They thought they'd hide underneath the tent and out of their headquarters. It looks like the U.S. and Israelis have tracked him down. The big challenge is the Strait of Hormuz, but it has not affected the market. It is still up for the second consecutive day. Let's bring in Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia. Senator, welcome back.
Good morning, Brian. Good to be on.
Well, thanks for joining us. First off,
sure.
your reaction to getting Ali Larijani.
I mean, I think it's a great strike. I mean, as you framed it, Brian, Larijani has been pivotal in the terrorism, not just of us, but his own people. And I think it's, to defang that organization and to cut the head off, so to speak, I think is hopefully will add to the high pressure situation that they find themselves in, bring them to the table and get this thing over with.
So here's General Jack Keane on what the significance of all this cut for.
The IRGC, it's such an expansive organization. It's their number one organization that sustains the regime in power. They've taken out all of their headquarters, certainly in Tehran, but they're at 32 other locations throughout the country. So this is very hard work, and that is why this is not going to be over in the next few days. This, and we keep wanting to figure out when is this going to end? When is this going to end? It's going to end when we accomplish the mission that's been assigned to the military commanders in terms of achieving their objectives, and it's condition-based. And I think we have to exercise some patience here.
And he said this about Larijani, cut three.
This is really quite significant. Larijani, not well known, has been running the country for the last 18 months, day in and day out. He has subsumed the power of the presidency. When the supreme leader, the Ayatollah, was alive, he designated him to run the country on an interim basis if he indeed was killed or died. So Larijani has been running that country for 18 months, and certainly he's been running it for sure since the Ayatollah died, despite the fact that his son has been appointed Mojab, you know, as his successor.
But we can't even see the successor, and we also know that this guy, Galarraza Soleimani, I know, same last name, he was killed along with his deputy, Saeed Qureshi, and at one point, I think it's got to, if you can get that internet on, it'll be okay for the Iranians to rise up against their government. How do you foresee it?
You know, I think this is all news that, as it compounds itself, shows that not only the targeting of individuals that are the most impactful here, but also the organizations. These are not, you know, these are not singular leaders that are not leading. Like when you talk about the IRGC and the other volunteer force, these are the ones that are have been attacking us and have been supporting Hamas, Hezbollah, and others. And so I think this is a calculated plan by us in conjunction, obviously, with the Israelis to, as I said, defang the organizations, let the room for uprisings come. I'm not sure we can count on a solid uprising here. I think it's too premature to say that. But I think certainly bringing them to the table in a more meaningful way. I mean, you know, Larijani, you know, was probably directing the folks that were doing the negotiating with Kof, and we see that was just sort of a sham exercise. So he's gone now, and I think that's significant.
Senator, I'm sure you're worried about the economy and getting that strait open. How are you approaching it?
Well, I think here again, I'm kind of reading between the lines here that there are possibilities of reopening. I think also, if you look at what Iran's done over the years, I am sure that they've been planting mines and detrimental deterrence in those straits for years. That's they know how valuable that is, not just to us but the rest of the world. We got to get that open, and hopefully we can find partners. I see President Trump is trying to find international partners. Not sure he's having the success that he would like, but that doesn't mean he's not going to keep trying.
Right. So let's talk about the Save America Act. You know, here's what Hakeem Jeffries said about it. You know, it's voter ID and some other things that are included.
Right.
Cut 26.
No, we've repeatedly made clear that the administration of elections are to be done as per the United States Constitution. This was an intentional choice that the framers of this country made, that the administration of elections are to be done at the state and local level. And states are free to make the determination as to what type of requirement there should be to ensure that elections are free and fair. Now, the United States Constitution also makes clear that only citizens can vote. That's a constitutional requirement. And states are free to implement that requirement as best they see fit.
So he says it's not in our Constitution. It's not what the founding fathers wanted. What do you think?
Well, I think it's ironic that he actually goes down this path when they basically tried to break the filibuster on the Voting Rights Act 2 years ago, which basically would have federalized enormous parts of the election procedure. So, you know, it's hypocritical, I think, on his part. I do believe that fundamentally that the fundamentals of having only citizens vote and reinforcements and enforcement on that at the federal level for the federal elections is well within the federal government's purview. I think, you know, he says, well, yeah, it's against the law. Well, that's not stopping them. And we see incidences of that. Voter ID, my state has voter ID. There are a lot of states that don't. You know, when that first came about, it was all going to be such a burden and such, you know, discriminatory towards certain groups. I haven't heard a peep out of anybody on, you know, you got to take your driver's license in or whatever your ID would be to vote. So I think that can be very successful. These are 80% issues. I'm certainly for the Save America Act, and we'll vote that way accordingly.
So why are you missing Senator Murkowski, Senator McConnell, I believe Senator Tillis? So what are these Republicans telling you?
You know, I think Senator McConnell fundamentally believes that the Save America Act, and I'll let him speak for himself, but he believes that that is a federalization of our election procedure, and he's very much opposed to that, as he opposed the Voting Rights Act. I think that this is much more, I wouldn't say nuanced, but a much more acceptable provisions that we want to make sure are equal across the states. And you know, the others, they've got their own explanations. We know that voting in Alaska is a different kind of experience simply because it's so large. But I'll let Lisa make those explanations, and she's been quite open about it.
But we don't think you're going to get 60 votes today. So what's the point of today?
Well, today we will get 50 votes. And because of the mechanism of it's a House message, this is kind of a technical thing, but because it comes over from the House, we only need the 50 vote majority, and we will get that. And that means that we will then begin talking and talking and fighting and talking and exposing the Democrats for their ability to defend illegals voting, their ability to defend that that having an ID is discriminatory, which it is not. For them having to defend that, you know, now we have boys playing in girls' sports or trans playing in girls' sports or things of that nature. One of the issues that is probably less clear is the mail-in voting aspect of it, because as we know, the president doesn't really like this and he wants it added on, which it will be. But in certain states, it's done in great majorities. I'm certain red
like states, Florida.
Florida, Utah, Montana. So I think that that's a provision that it probably is going to fall under greater scrutiny and probably would not pass.
It would be great if Democrats just came to the table like you guys did with infrastructure and
great.
Some other things, and gun control, and said, okay, what do you need to get on this? But instead, the minute the president said, it's my priority, every Democrat said, well, got to make sure you don't get it.
Exactly. But we will get on it today, which means we will be talking about it all week and trying to figure out a way to get it over the threshold. I don't think it has enough vote to get past 60 right now, but who knows? We can tell. You know, maybe there'll be some changes. But I think the Democrats are pretty dug in. If they can hold Department of Homeland Security funding in this environment and not pay these folks who are protecting us, if they can hold that, that shows you they can do pretty much anything.
I understand that. So, what is the latest on that? Do you see any mature minds coming forward?
That
you want to fund? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just read, and I'm getting ready to go into a meeting to find out that the Democrats came back with a counteroffer, but apparently it's the same as the first offer. They do this repeatedly, you know, like here's our second offer. It's just like the first one. And, you know, it's all about the warrants and the masks when other things like cameras and more investigations and de-escalation training, you know, the White House has said yes, yes, yes. So, you know, we had a compromise vehicle and we could compromise this, but they are still thinking they have some sort of political advantage here, which honestly, I don't see it.
I don't see it at all. I mean, and by the way, what I fear this is that I think they almost on some level, they saw the benefit of hurting the economy for 45 days. And because it's Trump's report card. And they go, look, you didn't get the revitalization. Where's the Trump bump? Where's all this stuff? And almost every economist said that 45-day shutdown, we're paying the price in 2026. That works politically to their advantage.
Right. And I think they read that, you know, all the takeover of the House and takeover of the Senate politically, and they're willing to hold basically the country hostage, our TSA, our Coast Guard, our Secret Service, FEMA. These are essential agencies, our cybersecurity arm. I don't know how they're going through TSA checkpoints and still holding this position, because I think it's very precarious. People are quitting. They're demoralized, as you would be when you're not getting paid. And they're willing to keep doing that because they think it's a political advantage.
Senator, this is a crazy time right now.
It is.
And right now, for your judges, is everything held up? Like, we're trying to get, you're trying to get how many judges through?
Right. We're going to pass a judge today. The judges have to go through individually. The administration nominees can go through as a bulk. So we're going to keep working the judges. I think the president has gotten more judges, but there's still more to have, and we know how essential those are.
Joe Kent has resigned as a counterterrorism official under Tulsi Gabbard, saying that he believes that Israel has buffaloed us into this war. It's not our national interest. Your thoughts?
I don't know Joe Kent. I might have met him on one occasion that I can recall. I don't know. From what I'm reading, I thought it was like maybe he was more center right and he was thinking, you know, more isolationist kind of thing. I don't know if it's an anti-Israel position he's taking. I think it's very unclear. I don't think it's helpful. And so, because the press will, you know, mainstream press will just have a heyday on this.
And they are.
Yeah. And so I'm not sure. I mean, maybe you know better what the pushes and pulls for him to do such a, it's pretty dramatic measure. Where it's coming from, I don't know. So, you know, it's pretty new news. I'll have to dig into it.
All right. Thanks, Warren. Senator Shelley Moore, Capito of West Virginia, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Back in a moment.
Keeping you informed, engaged, and always a step ahead. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Quick follow-up. Had you had to iron some things out? Were you hesitant to confirm this? And do you plan on greeting Archbishop Hicks outside of St. Pat's along the route?
I there's nothing to iron out. This was one of the easiest decisions I've had to make as the mayor. It's something I'm really looking forward to, and I look forward to seeing the Archbishop again.
So this is the reason why this is news is because this mayor blew off the installation of a brand new cardinal in the number one most famous church in the country, Catholic Church, which is just a short walk from his home. Didn't show up. No interest. And he couldn't commit to the St. Patrick's Day parade until yesterday. And then he said, my decision to go to church, it's an easy decision. I just waited till the last minute. Are you that busy raising taxes? You didn't have a moment. There's no giving anymore with this mayor. No given. I mean, the guy's crazy maniac when it comes to raising taxes, to the point where Governor Hochul, she's going to have a hard enough time with Bruce Blakeman, who's coming up hard. But if you raise taxes, that's a welcome mat for any Republican with a brain in his head. And that Bruce Blakeman is extremely savvy. Nassau County executive will be our opponent. And believe me, she is going to, if she wins, she is going to raise taxes because she's scared to death of this guy. She feels as though he's a social media maven. They think his Q rating's high. They think he's extremely popular, even though he got less votes than de Blasio and less votes than anybody that won. But still, she's afraid of him. I don't get it. But right now, the parade's going on right now, and America, at least for one day, will start drinking again. And I don't root for you to drink. But I do root for restaurants and bars because it seems like people who are doing the casual drinking aren't casually drinking. I think they're getting high. So that's one way in which people buying marijuana and doing things has kind of worked against the drinking industry. I also think the Ozempic, Zeptide or whatever it's called, that is also working against because I think it shaves off your appetite. And some say it diminishes your thirst to drink. Not so much liquids, but alcohol. All right, listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come back, Kennedy joins us. And there's no stopping her. She is a force of nature. Our nature, like Earth's nature. And we're also bringing the latest on the resignation of Joe Kent, the counterterrorism official. He seems to have gone back to the podcast world.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Kennedy's in studio, and she is happy. She's talking about career highlight, right? And you say happy St. Patrick's Day.
And happy St. Patrick's Day to you, Brian.
And what does it say on the shirt? It says Gucci?
It says Gucci. It says, snakes are nice, but here's the advice. To hug a snake can be a mistake.
1920...
One.
Yes. What, is that something someone said? Because St. Patrick's chased the snakes out of Ireland.
Exactly right. So don't hug them. Like, let them leave.
Right.
That's the advice.
Because that's not really true, is it?
About St. Patrick?
You think one person could chase snakes out of an island, off an island?
I'm sorry. I'm a believer. So, yes, I do believe that he was imbued with the Holy Spirit, which allowed him to get the snakes out of Ireland. And he was probably some sort of biological engineer.
Yes. Are they there now?
I haven't seen any, but again, I've never been to Ireland.
Right. Well, yeah, it'd be easier for me to believe you if you went.
Yeah.
Right.
So I got to work on that for next year.
Go see if there are any snakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would. Yeah. I was thinking about going to Ireland, but it's gone so left wing nutty.
I know, that's a thing.
I'm thinking, why do I want to give them my money?
But I've heard that because you don't want to punish the good people who are still there. I feel the same way about California. Like the people who are still there, the long suffering, well intentioned people, they should not be punished. You have to find the pockets of the good people and give them your money.
Right. We have to go vacation to pockets.
Yes, right. Exactly right. Right.
I'm not going to the whole island. I'm going to
it's a pocket. It's not Pakistan, it's Pakistan.
Right, that's true. Should I go to Pakistan instead? They have snakes.
Sounds like fun, yeah.
They have a lot of snakes.
Yeah, I think the Middle East is just a great time right now. Right. I just booked some cheap tickets to Dubai.
Oh, they're fantastic. They got the perfect hotel for you to stay in.
Six-star hotel.
They have you staying right by a natural gas plant? Yeah. It's fantastic.
That's the future.
So what do you think? Do you think it's a big deal that counter-terrorist official has resigned saying it's Israel that forced us into this war? Do you think it's a big deal?
I don't know. I mean, this is one of those things where rationality has gone out the window. Like people's ability to think critically and give both sides equal weight and take in evidence and ponder it. And then come back with a conclusion, that is all out the window. Everything has to be an emotional reaction. And for some reason, more so than any other time in my life, like anti-Semitism is all the rage. And it is like Kanye was just 18 months too early with his anti-Semitism. If he had waited till now,
they'd be
talking Kanye 2028, like for real.
Right. You know what? That's a good point.
Progressives and these super weird anti-Semitic Republicans, they would be fighting over him.
I got some weird poll numbers to go over. I mean, put it this way.
Speaking of weird, Brian.
Yeah, well, that would have been the transition I would have used had I been a professional, but I'm keeping my amateur status. I had a tab for polls. What a shame. Oh, I have a tab for everything, as you know.
Yeah.
But they did a poll.
It's very impressive. It's great organization. Do you set the tabs and do you write on them or does someone else do that? I know you have an army of people that you employ.
Right. My army does not do tabs.
Okay. They just so these fight. Are all Kilmeade.
Right. They fight. My army fights for freedom.
It's a great army.
Yeah, it is. What a shame. I had a tab for polls, but here's the deal.
Maybe it's in a different
Only
packet.
Only 23% of Democrats approve of Israel. And you have 56% of Republicans approve of Israel, 20% of independents. So if I'm Netanyahu, I say, okay, this is my last shot. After this, they have to come up with their own arms industry.
Yes.
They have to use it for profit and for themselves. They have to do it.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. But instead of like, well, buy it from the U.S. because we have a successful economy, they got to go, no, we got to manufacture it because you watch Joe Biden stop them from using the weapons because he knows more. Because Joe Biden knows everything about the military. He was telling them what weapons to have.
Do you mean the Joe Biden committee?
Yeah. Who was ever running the White House. And we know by their responses since they left. Do you know Ben Rhodes said any Democrat that supports anything, that does anything to support this war or votes for it, should be primaried. Now, Ben Rhodes was an insider.
Oh, I'm sorry, pallet of cash,
yeah.
Ben Rhodes?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this is the worst. Do you realize Barack Obama has been reputed in every one of his foreign policy stands. Number one.
I'd say the domestic ones as well, seeing the state of the ACA.
Yeah.
And the price of insurance.
How dare you not renew subsidies for a health care plan that should have been on automatic pilot by now if it was successful, that Joe Biden put an expiration date on to temporarily, during a pandemic, supplement people's income because we didn't know what the Chinese hit us with.
Yes.
So, but if you look at it, Iran, let's alienate Saudi Arabia. Let's give Iran money. JCPOA.
The 80s called. They want their foreign policy back.
Right. Oh, yeah. Vladimir Putin. We're ready to work with you.
Yeah. Mitt Romney, I'm really worried about Russia.
Thanks, Barack, for that response.
So, yeah, I mean, just about everything he did. But I don't, what about J.D. Vance coming out yesterday saying...
Out of the closet?
No.
Like that, the gay Ayatollah?
No, he's not Ayatollah.
Okay.
Supreme Command, Supreme Leader, which is my nickname.
It always has been.
Yeah, has been. Isn't Brian shorter?
It just doesn't fit on the Chiron.
Right. My problem is, when you have a nickname, it should be shorter. Mm. Right? Like Chip.
Wasn't that Eisenhower's name? Wasn't he the Supreme Allied Commander?
That's right.
Yeah.
And then he just had to suffer with President after it was done. Never was happy.
Yeah.
He golfed most of the time.
He's not alone. The presidential golfing is a very popular pastime.
But President
Trump, back to you, Brian.
While we're at war, he's not golfing.
No.
It's the least you could do.
Yes.
I think it's good of him because he has a golf course everywhere. Not only does he have his own clubs, he doesn't have to rent them. He has his own clubs, like literally golf club. Mm-hmm. Not like his own putter, his own golf club. And they're everywhere.
Wow. You should sell those.
Right. Do you make a profit on a club? To me.
Oh, Brian, I have done the research on golf club margins, and thank you very much for asking.
But, like, it's so much land.
Yeah.
You got to have people golfing like five at a time.
Oh, boy, now you're starting to sound like bold liberal Brian Kilmeade, old lefty Kilmeade here.
Right.
Too much land.
I'm not saying drill oil on the land. I'm not saying
frack. House homeless people.
Yeah, I'm saying
on golf courses.
That.
That's what they're saying in LA.
Well, I'm not saying put the homeless people on the
golf
course.
The lady who's running for mayor, the super lefty, she's like, let's just get rid of all the golf courses and put homeless people there.
She's running that?
Four!
Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah, let's, by the way, do you see that on average in New York City, we're spending $81,000 on every homeless person? $81,000. That's more than people mostly earn.
I wonder if I kick my children out, will they qualify as homeless? And can I take that subsidy?
Right.
Because that'd be a lot of money.
Well, it would pay for college.
Yeah.
They'd have to be homeless for 4 years.
For private college.
I've never seen someone kick them out just to make money.
Well, you know, that's where creative capitalism comes in.
Really?
Huh?
I didn't know we were looking for a place for creative capitalism. It had nowhere to go?
Not in New York.
So
in communist New York.
What are you going to do to make sure Cuba is no longer communist?
That's, you know, give them Amazon subscriptions.
Right.
Give them all Prime subscriptions.
And pretend they can pay for it?
Well, you find a way. Like, that's the thing about... necessity is the mother of invention. Like, you find a way when you need something, you don't realize you need something until you start doom scrolling Amazon.
So a couple of things. You make these statements like they're everyday statements that you're reiterating, but no one's ever said them before. Right. So, you know, like in with the out, in with the old, out with the new.
Yes, but that's
something people say.
Confidence is half the battle, right. Brian.
Because sometimes I'm like, I never heard that before.
Yeah.
So you should either be the Marco Polo Magellan, like I have a new phrase, Brian, get ready, or don't pretend like I should have heard this.
I'm surprised you haven't.
Right.
So, I'm trying to hide my disappointment.
Right. Through your smile. So Cuba might flip. They have no oil, they have no food, so they got no energy. They went into the Communist Party building and did a Morgan Wallen. They threw the furniture off the second floor. Dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Remember that when he did that in
Dangerous.
Nashville?
Right, but there's no cops around.
Yeah.
They're running for the hills. So not realizing they don't have leverage, Oscar Perez Olivia Fraga, who, as you know, is the deputy prime minister, said this. Cut 36.
Cuba is open to having a fluid commercial relationship with U.S. companies, also with Cubans residing in the United States and their descendants. And this extends beyond the commercial sphere. It also applies to investments.
So is this a good
time? Bring your money.
Right. If you would just let me stay in power, I'll let the Cuban exiles invest in my ridiculous country.
Win-win.
Right. How is this going to go down? Like, are we going to have you come in again?
But I like that because Cuba has known that capitalism is coming for decades.
Yes.
And it's like Iran has known that a U.S. war has been coming for decades. So what they're both doing is responding differently. So Iran should respond like Cuba, like, oh my gosh, this would be the best time to turn the entire Middle East into Dubai. Let's start with Tehran. This could be such a great time. And Cuba is not like, oh, we hate you so much. Watch this. We're going to send some missiles to Ecuador.
Right.
And Costa Rica.
And they do.
How you like us now? No, they're like, bring your money.
Right.
We've got stuff.
But a couple of things. Can't be to them. sorry, somebody else got to run the place. You've tried since the 1960s.
Yeah.
It's a great example of a communism doesn't work, but think about this. Now you have a situation where you keep the trains and garbage, you pick up your own garbage, I don't want to run the country, but you come in there and you allow the transition to take place, no money, no investment, but allow the oil to come in from Mexico. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as the leadership leaves, if they don't leave, they're already working up court cases of the people that they've killed and the places that they corrupted. They're going to end up in a Brooklyn jail. And Maduro is the perfect example. Take your trip to Dubai or Moscow. Go live with Eric Snowden. He's got a bunk bed. You could stay in the top bunk.
Yeah.
I am sure he takes the bottom, so to speak.
You should always take the top bunk. Yeah. I learned that.
Why?
Because you don't want to be on the bottom because things drip on the bottom.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay. So we had to have bunk beds. The girls had to have bunk beds. They never slept. They slept in the same bed.
So did mine.
Right.
Which I thought was so funny.
Shouldn't we add demand reimbursements? We say, well, yes. You need bunk beds, but no one's using
the top. I'm paying for two.
Right.
Yeah.
Separate.
But you're using one.
You know what else
we did?
That's
when you take the $81,000.
Right. That you were going to make
at home.
And
you take it as a credit and you buy your own furniture.
Right. You never get paid back, right?
I don't know.
Right.
I'm not there yet.
What about
I sent my daughter something yesterday. It was a funny meme on Instagram of a little girl eating a beautiful fruit platter poolside. And it said, when my girls pick a retirement home for me, I hope they remember the Four Seasons. So I'm hoping like this investment at some point I get it back.
Yeah, I'm really concerned. If I start losing my mind, you have to step in and take power of attorney. I don't trust. It's going to be a soft landing.
Can we please clip that sentence? I'm going to send that over to my attorney.
Listen, I'm going to step in here. He anticipated something like this. We're going to take a short time out, come back with more Kennedy, who's celebrating 20,000 podcasts? 100,000.
We're getting there. 1,000 right now, 20,000 maybe by next week.
All right. It's St. Patrick's Day. Back in a moment.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Will it be necessary to use even a limited ground force to secure whatever nuclear material remains in Iran as part of that threat?
Yeah.
And secondly, have you made a decision?
You mean to go in and get it?
Yes, sir.
Why would I tell you a thing like that?
And secondly,
you know, I can't say to reporters, sir, will you attack Carg Island? Will you occupy Carg? They ask me these questions. And I don't want to be mean, but they're stupid questions. If any president answered those questions, they shouldn't be president.
So that's the president of the United States. He says, I'm not going to tell you if I'm taking Carg Island, and I'm not going to tell you if I'm going to need land people on the ground to take uranium. Kennedy's our guest, and I'm glad. So your thoughts about the president getting mad?
I understand, like, I'm not a huge fan of war. Not a big fan. Yeah. I prefer capitalism over combat.
And you like baseball.
I love baseball.
Right.
I love the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
Did you watch that game last night, the Venezuela-Italy game? Oh, of course not, because you go to bed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was great. I love baseball. I love the World Baseball Classic. I love the New York Yankees.
If you watch Venezuela play Italy, you love baseball.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but Italy has been raging.
Right.
Yes.
I know.
Baseball has been very, very good to me.
But I hear that to be on the Italian team, you just have to be Italian, like half Italian. Like,
so
I don't have to have, like,
my sexy teenage fiance is furious because he's like, it's the American B team, and this one is the American C team, and that one, he's like, every
Dominican
country,
Republican.
They're all born in America.
Well, the problem
the
is...
The Italian team, like, it's something ridiculous, like 29 out of 30 of them born in the U.S.
You should have to have citizenship. They don't have citizenship.
Come on, man!
Right. But, see...
That's not world baseball!
Right.
That's like your Nana.
Right. But NBA,
don't
you think the NBA is a little the same way, though? Because if you watch these games, I mean, you see Doncic and...
It is the greatest argument for American exceptionalism that we have ever seen.
But I digress. How do you feel about the president getting mad that he's asked tactical questions?
Well, no, you cannot answer that.
Okay.
You cannot answer... Like,
so you
Pete
side with
Hegg
the president.
Well, I don't Sure. On this, yes. You cannot telegraph to your enemy what you are doing.
All right. So I'm going to ask you to give me your opinion on this then.
Okay.
I have the second one of the second question that he seems to be upset about. And remember the question.
Yeah, but Brian, I can't answer a question like that. You shouldn't be even asking it. It's one of so many different things. It's not high on the list. But it's one of so many different things, and okay. I can change my mind in seconds. But, you know, for you to ask a question, who would answer a question like that? I mean, you're asking me a question, Carg Island, okay, everything. Who would ask a question like that? And what fool would answer it, okay? Let's say I was going to do it, or let's say I wasn't going to do it. What would I tell you? Oh, yes, Brian, I'm thinking about doing it. Let you know what time and when it'll take place. It's not. You know, it's sort of a foolish question. A little surprising for you because you're a smart man.
So he guess what
At least
he did?
It's consistent.
Guess what he did 4 hours later?
Yeah.
What did he do? Bomb Carg Island.
Yeah.
And then I talked to him Friday night, and he said, "I go, so you bomb Carg Island."
Maybe he's worried that you're texting with the Iranians,
right? Like somebody else. And I said, he goes, "They were loading the planes." He goes, "I do think it was a bad question." I go, "But you got mad." He goes, "I wasn't mad." He was mad.
Right? He was mad. Yeah, he was mad. It's like my mom always said, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed.
I expect more. And I try to tell people don't.
And that's the worst. Like, you prefer your mom's anger because anger is fleeting. Disappointment is forever.
What I would always come back with is, no, you don't. You don't expect more. You know me. Yeah. I mean, I have not raised the bar. And if I did raise the bar, I would know it.
I love that he consistently, like, answered it. And I love that he gave you a miniature dressing down.
Right. You think I needed that? A comeuppance.
Well.
So, yeah, a little bit. I'm a little bit too high and mighty. But I got a text message from people like, oh, I guess it wasn't the dumbest question.
You were looking in the mirror the other day, and you said to yourself in the mirror, my humility is the best thing about me.
Right, which was wrong in retrospect. And I have
it's
other
your cheekbones,
things. Yes,
right.
It's my cheekbones. It absolutely is. Kennedy, what do you want to plug?
I would like to plug
my podcast,
Kennedy Saves the World. And also, I've got a bunch of tour dates. I am on tour, and it is the funnest show. So go to KennedyNation.com.
Right.
Get your tickets. I'm going to Nebraska, Klamath Falls, Oregon, Naples, Florida. The list goes on and on.
Right. But that is a list.
Yes.
So find out more.
KennedyNation.com.
There's an excellent chance if you're in a town in America, Kennedy's coming to your house.
I'll be there on my high five. I'll give you a hug. I don't even care.
And you got to get tickets though first, right?
Please do.
Yeah, please do. Kennedy, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Kilmeade.
Say
Johnny's dead.